You mean the academy?
Yes, you have to leave. You're bound. It's up to you. Take her away from this place.
Her words were crazy. No one left the academy. Yet, as she held me there and stared into my eyes, I began to feel strange. A fuzzy feeling clouded my mind. What she said suddenly sounded very reasonable, like the most reasonable thing in the world. Yes, I needed to take Lissa away. Take her... Feet pounded in the hallway, and a group of guardians rounded the corner. I didn't recognize them. They weren't from the school. They pried her off of me, restraining her wild thrashing. Someone asked me if I was okay, but I could only keep staring at Miss Karp.
"Don't let her use the power," she screamed. "Save her! Save her from herself!"
The guardians had later explained to me that she wasn't well and had been taken to a place where she could recover. She would be safe and cared for, they assured me. She would recover. Only she hadn't. Back in the present, I stared at the books and tried to put it all together. Lissa, Ms. Karp, St. Vladimir. What was I supposed to do? Someone rapped at my door, and I jerked out of my memories. No one had visited me, not even staff, since my suspension. When I opened the door, I saw Mason in the hall. "Twice in one day?" I asked. "And how'd you even get up here?" He flashed his easy smile. "Someone put a lit match in one of the bathroom's garbage cans. Damn shame. The staff's kind of busy. Come on, I'm springing you." I shook my head. Setting fires was apparently a new sign of affection. Christian had done it, and now Mason. "Sorry, no saving me tonight. If I get caught..." "Lissa's orders." I shut up and let him smuggle me out of the building. He took me over to the Moroi dorm and miraculously got me in and up to her room unseen. I wondered if there was a distracting bathroom fire in this building, too. Inside her room, I found a party in full swing. Lissa, Camille, Carly, Aaron, and a few other royals sat around laughing, listening to loud music, and passing around bottles of whiskey. No Mia, no Jesse. Natalie, I noticed a few moments later, sat apart from the group, clearly unsure how to act around all of them. Her awkwardness was totally obvious. Lissa stumbled to her feet, the fuzzy feelings in our bond indicating that she'd been drinking for a while.
"Rose!"
She turned to Mason with a dazzling smile.
"You delivered."
He swept her an over-the-top bow.
"I'm at your command."
I hoped he'd done it for the thrill of it, and not because of any compulsion. Lissa slung an arm around my waist and pulled me down with the others.
"Join the festivities."
"What are we celebrating?"
"I don't know. Your escape tonight?"
A few of the others held up plastic cups, cheering and toasting me. Xander Badika poured two more cups, handing them to Mason and me. I took mine with a smile, all the while feeling uneasy about the night's turn of events. Not so long ago, I would have welcomed a party like this and would have downed my drink in 30 seconds. Too much bothered me this time, though. Like the fact that the royals were treating Lissa like a goddess. Like how none of them seemed to remember that I'd been accused of being a blood whore. Like how Lissa was completely unhappy despite her smiles and laughter. "Where'd you get the whiskey?" I asked.
"Mr. Nagy," Aaron said.
He sat very close to Lissa. Everyone knew Mr. Nagy drank all the time after school and kept a stash on campus. He continually used new hiding places, and students continually found them. Lissa leaned against Aaron's shoulder.
"Aaron helped me break into his room and take them. He had them hidden in the bottom of the paint closet."
The others laughed, and Aaron gazed at her with complete and utter worship. Amusingly, I realized she hadn't had to use any compulsion on him. He was just that crazy for her. He always had been.
"Why aren't you drinking?" Mason asked me a little while later, speaking quietly into my ear.
I glanced down at my cup, half surprised to see it full. "I don't know. I guess I don't think guardians should drink around their charges."
"She's not your charge yet," You aren't on duty. You won't be for a long time. Since when did you get so responsible? I didn't really think I was all that responsible. But I was thinking about what Dimitri had said about balancing fun and obligation. It just seemed wrong to let myself go wild when Lissa was in such a vulnerable state lately. Wiggling out of my tight spot between her and Mason, I walked over and sat beside Natalie. "Hey, Nat, you're quiet tonight." She held a cup as full as mine.
"So are you."
I laughed softly. "I guess so." She tilted her head, watching Mason and the Royals like they were some sort of science experiment. They'd consumed a lot more whiskey since I'd arrived, and the silliness had shot up considerably.
"Weird, huh? You used to be the center of attention. Now she is."
I blinked in surprise. I hadn't considered it like that. "I guess so."
"Hey, Rose," said Xander, nearly spilling his drink as he walked over to me. "What was it like?"
"What was what like?"
"Letting someone feed off you."
The others fell quiet, a sort of anticipation settling over them.
"She didn't do that," said Lissa in a warning voice. "I told you." "Yeah, yeah, I know nothing happened with Jesse and Ralph. But you guys did it, right? While you were gone." "Let it go," said Lissa.
Compulsion worked best with direct eye contact, and his attention was focused on me, not her.
"I mean, it's cool and everything. You guys did what you had to do, right? It's not like you're a feeder. I just want to know what it was like. Danielle Slesky let me bite her once. She said it didn't feel like anything."
There was a collective "ew" from among the girls. Sex and blood with vampires was dirty. Between Moroi, it was cannibalistic.
"You are such a liar," said Camille. "No, I'm serious. It was just a small bite. She didn't get high like the feeders. Did you?"
He put his free arm around my shoulder.
"Did you like it?"
Lissa's face went still and pale. Alcohol muted the full force of her feelings, but I could read enough to know how she felt. Dark, scared thoughts trickled into me, underscored with anger. She usually had a good grip on her temper, unlike me, but I'd seen it flare up before. Once it had happened at a party very similar to this one, just a few weeks after Ms. Karp had been taken away. Greg Dashkoff, a distant cousin of Natalie's, had held the party in his room. His parents apparently knew someone who knew someone, because he had one of the biggest rooms in the dorm. He'd been friends with Lissa's brother before the accident, and had been more than happy to take Andre's little sister into his social fold. Greg had also been happy to take me in, and the two of us had been all over each other that night. For a sophomore like me, being with a Royal Moroi senior was a huge rush. I drank a lot that night, but still managed to keep an eye on Lissa. She always wore an edge of anxiety around this many people, but no one really noticed, because she could interact with them so well. My heavy buzz kept a lot of her feelings from me, but as long as she looked okay, I didn't worry. Mid-kiss, Greg suddenly broke away and looked at something over my shoulder. We both sat in the same chair with me on his lap, and I craned my neck to see. "What is it?" He shook his head with a sort of amused exasperation.
"Wade brought a feeder."
I followed his gaze to where Wade Voda stood with his arm around a frail girl about my age. She was human, and pretty, with wavy blonde hair and porcelain skin, pale from so much blood loss. A few other guys had homed in on her and stood with Wade, laughing and touching her face and hair. "She's already fed too much today," I said, observing her coloring and complete look of confusion. Greg slid his hand behind my neck and turned me back to him.
"They won't hurt her."
We kissed a while longer, and then I felt a tap on my shoulder.
"Rose."
I looked up into Lissa's face. Her anxious expression startled me, because I couldn't feel the emotions behind it.
"Too much beer for me."
I climbed off Greg's lap.
"Where are you going?"
he asked. "Be right back." I pulled Lissa aside, suddenly wishing I was sober. What's wrong?
Them.
She nodded toward the guys with the feeder girl. She still had a group around her, and when she shifted to look at one of them, I saw small red wounds scattered on her neck. They were doing a sort of group feeding, taking turns biting her and making gross suggestions. High and oblivious, she let them.
They can't do that, Lissa told me.
She's a feeder. Nobody's going to stop them. Lissa looked up at me with pleading eyes. Hurt, outrage, and anger filled them.
Will you?
I'd always been the aggressive one, looking after her ever since we were little. Seeing her there now, so upset and looking at me to fix things, was more than I could stand. Giving her a shaky nod, I stumbled over to the group. You so desperate to get some that you've got to drug girls now, Wade? I asked. He glanced up from where he'd been running his lips over the human girl's neck.
Why? Are you done with Greg and looking for more?
I put my hands on my hips and hoped I looked fierce. The truth was, I was actually starting to feel a little nauseous from all I'd drunk. I had enough of drugs in the world to get me near you, I told him. A few of his friends laughed. But maybe you can go make out with that lamp over there. It seems to be out of it enough to make even you happy. You don't need her anymore. A few other people laughed.
This isn't any of your business, he hissed. She's just lunch.
Referring to feeders as meals was about the only thing worse than calling vampires blood whores. This isn't a feeding room. Nobody wants to see this.
Yeah, agreed a senior girl. It's gross.
A few of her friends agreed. Wade glared at all of us, me the hardest.
Fine. None of you have to see it. Come on.
He grabbed the feeder girl's arm and jerked her away. Clumsily, she stumbled along with him out of the room, making soft whimpering noises. Best I could do, I told Lissa. She stared at me, shocked.
He's just going to take her to his room. He'll do even worse things to her.
Liz, I don't like it either, but it's not like I can go chase him down or anything. I rubbed my forehead. I could go punch him or something, but I feel like I'm going to throw up as it is. Her face grew dark, and she bit her lip.
He can't do that.
I'm sorry. I returned to the chair with Greg, feeling a little bad about what had happened. I didn't want to see the feeder get taken advantage of any more than Lissa did. It reminded me too much of what a lot of Moroi guys thought they could do with vampire girls. But I also couldn't win this battle, not tonight. Greg had shifted me around to get a better angle on my neck, when I noticed Lissa was gone a few minutes later. Practically falling, I clambered off his lap and looked around. Where's Lissa? He reached for me.
Probably the bathroom.
I couldn't feel a thing through the bond. The alcohol had numbed it. Stepping out into the hallway, I breathed a sigh of relief at escaping the loud music and voices. It was quiet out here, except for a crashing sound a couple rooms down. The door was ajar, and I pushed my way inside. The feeder girl cowered in a corner, terrified. Lissa stood with arms crossed, her face angry and terrible. She was staring at Wade intently, and he stared back, enchanted. He also held a baseball bat, and it looked like he'd used it already, because the room was trashed. Bookshelves, the stereo, the mirror?
Break the window, too, Lissa told him smoothly. Come on, it doesn't matter.
Hypnotized, he walked over to the large tinted window. I stared, my mouth nearly hitting the floor, as he pulled back and slammed the bat into the glass. It shattered, sending shards everywhere and letting in the early morning light it normally kept blocked out. He winced as it shone in his eyes, but he didn't move away.
Lissa, I exclaimed. Stop it, make him stop.
He should have stopped earlier.
I barely recognized the look on her face. I'd never seen her so upset, and I'd certainly never seen her do anything like this. I knew what it was, of course. I knew right away. Compulsion. For all I knew, she was seconds away from having him turn the bat on himself.
Please, Lissa,
Don't do it anymore, please. Through the fuzzy alcoholic buzz, I felt a trickle of her emotions. They were strong enough to practically knock me over. Black, angry, merciless. Startling feelings to be coming from sweet and steady Lissa. I'd known her since kindergarten, but in that moment, I barely knew her. And I was afraid. Please, Lissa, I repeated. He's not worth it. Let him go. She didn't look at me. Her stormy eyes were focused entirely on Wade. Slowly, carefully, he lifted up the bat, tilting it so it lined up with his own skull. Liss, I begged. Oh, God, I was going to have to tackle her or something to make her stop. Don't do it.
He should have stopped, Lissa said evenly.
The bat quit moving. It was now at exactly the right distance to gain momentum and strike.
He shouldn't have done that to her. People can't treat other people like that, even feeders.
But you're scaring her, I said softly. Look at her. Nothing happened at first. Then Lissa let her gaze flick toward the feeder. The human girl still sat huddled in a corner, arms wrapped around herself protectively. Her blue eyes were enormous, and light reflected off her wet, tear-streaked face. She gave a choked, terrified sob. Lissa's face stayed impassive. Inside her, I could feel the battle she was waging for control. Some part of her didn't want to hurt Wade, despite the blinding anger that otherwise filled her. Her face crumpled, and she squeezed her eyes shut. Her right hand reached out to her left wrist and clenched it, nails digging deep into the flesh. She flinched at the pain, but through the bond, I felt the shock of the pain distract her from Wade. She let go of the compulsion, and he dropped the bat, suddenly looking confused. I let go of the breath I'd been holding. In the hallway, footsteps sounded. I'd left the door open, and the crash had attracted attention. A couple of dorm staff members burst into the room, freezing when they saw the destruction in front of them. What happened? The rest of us looked at each other. Wade looked completely lost. He stared at the room, at the bat, and then at Lissa and me.
I don't know. I can't...
He turned his full attention to me and suddenly grew angry.
What the... It was you! You wouldn't let the feeder thing go!
The dorm workers looked at me questioningly, and in a few seconds, I made up my mind. You have to protect her. The more she uses it, the worse it'll get. Stop her, Rose. Stop her before they notice. Before they notice and take her away, too. Get her out of here. I could see Miss Karp's face in my mind, pleading frantically. I gave Wade a haughty look, knowing full well no one would question a confession I made, or even suspect Lissa. Yeah, well, if you'd let her go, I told him, I wouldn't have had to do this. Save her. Save her from herself. After that night, I never drank again. I refused to let my guard down around Lissa, and 2 days later, while I was supposed to be suspended for destruction of property, I took Lissa and broke out of the academy. Back in Lissa's room with Xander's arm around me and her angry and upset eyes on us, I didn't know if she'd do anything drastic again. But the situation reminded me too much of that one from 2 years ago, and I knew I had to defuse it.
Just a little blood, Xander was saying. I won't take much. I just want to see what Dampire tastes like. Nobody here cares.
Xander, growled Lissa, leave her alone.
I slipped out from under his arm and smiled, looking for a funny retort rather than one that might start a fight. Come on, I teased. I had to hit the last guy who asked me that, and you're a hell of a lot prettier than Jesse. It'd be a waste.
Pretty? He asked. I'm stunningly sexy, but not pretty.
Carly laughed.
No, you're pretty. Todd told me you buy some kind of French hair gel.
Xander, distracted as so many drunk people easily are, turned around to defend his honor, forgetting me. The tension disappeared, and he took the teasing about his hair with a good attitude. Across the room, Lissa met my eyes with relief. She smiled and gave me a small nod of thanks before she returned her attention to Aaron. Chapter 16. The next day, it fully hit me how much things had changed since the Jesse and Ralph rumors first started. For some people, I remained a non-stop source of whispers and laughter. From Lissa's converts, I received friendliness and occasional defense. Overall, I realized our classmates actually gave me very little of their attention anymore. This became especially true when something new distracted everyone. Lissa and Aaron. Apparently, Mia had found out about the party and had blown up when she heard that Aaron had been there without her. She'd bitched at him and told him that if he wanted to be with her, he couldn't run around and hang out with Lissa. So Aaron had decided he didn't want to be with her. He'd broken up with her that morning and moved on. Now he and Lissa were all over each other. They stood around in the hall and at lunch, arms wrapped around one another, laughing and talking. Lissa's bond feeling showed only mild interest, despite her gazing at him as though he was the most fascinating thing on the planet. Most of this was for show, unbeknownst to him. He looked as though he could have built a shrine at her feet at any moment. And me? I felt ill. My feelings were nothing, however, compared to Mia's. At lunch, she sat on the far side of the room from us, eyes fixed pointedly ahead, ignoring the consolations of the friends near her. She had blotchy pink patches on her pale round cheeks, and her eyes were red-rimmed. She said nothing mean when I walked past. No smug jokes, no mocking glares. Lissa had destroyed her, just as Mia had vowed to do to us. The only person more miserable than Mia was Christian. Unlike her, he had no qualms about studying the happy couple while wearing an open look of hatred on his face. As usual, no one except me even noticed. After watching Lissa and Aaron make out for the 10th time, I left lunch early and went to see Ms. Carmack, the teacher who taught elemental basics. I'd been wanting to ask her something for a while. Rose, right? She seemed surprised to see me, but not angry or annoyed like half the other teachers did lately. Yeah. I have a question about, magic. She raised an eyebrow. Novices didn't take magic classes.
Sure. What do you want to know?
I was listening to the priest talk about St. Vladimir the other day. Do you know what element he specialized in? Vladimir, I mean, not the priest. She frowned.
Odd. As famous as he is around here, I'm surprised it never comes up. I'm no expert, but in all the stories I've heard, he never did anything that I'd say connects to any one of the elements. Either that or no one ever recorded it.
What about his healings? I pushed further. Is there an element that lets you perform those?
No, not that I know of.
Her lips quirked into a small smile.
People of faith would say he healed through the power of God. Not any sort of elemental magic. After all, one thing the stories are certain about is that he was full of spirit.
Is it possible he didn't specialize? Her smile faded.
Rose, is this really about St. Vladimir? Or is it about Lissa?
Not exactly, I stammered.
I know it's hard on her, especially in front of all of her classmates. But she has to be patient, she explained gently. It will happen. It always happens.
But sometimes it doesn't.
Rarely. But I don't think she'll be one of those. She's got a higher than average aptitude in all four, even if she hasn't hit specialized levels. One of them will shoot up any day now.
That gave me an idea. Is it possible to specialize in more than one element? She laughed and shook her head.
No. Too much power. No one could handle all that magic, not without losing her mind.
Oh, great. Okay, thanks. I started to leave, then thought of something else.
Hey,
Do you remember Miss Karp? What did she specialize in? Miss Carmack got that uncomfortable look other teachers did when anyone mentioned Miss Karp.
Actually,
what?
I almost forgot. I think she really was one of the rare ones who never specialized. She just always kept a very low control over all four.
I spent the rest of my afternoon classes thinking about Ms. Carmack's words, trying to work them into my unified Lissa-Karp-Vladimir theory. I also watched Lissa. So many people wanted to talk to her now that she barely noticed my silence. Every so often, though, I'd see her glance at me and smile, a tired look in her eyes. Laughing and gossiping all day with people she only sort of liked was taking its toll on her. "The mission's accomplished," I told her after school. "We can stop Project Brainwash." We sat on benches in the courtyard, and she swung her legs back and forth.
"What do you mean?"
"You've done it. You've stopped people from making my life horrible. You destroyed Mia. You stole Aaron. Play with him for another couple weeks, then drop him and the other royals. You'll be happier."
"You don't think I'm happy now?"
"I know you aren't. Some of the parties are fun, but you hate pretending to be friends with people you don't like. And you don't like most of them. I know how much Xander pissed you off the other night."
"He's a jerk. But I can deal with that. If I stop hanging out with them, everything will go back the way it was. Mia will just start up again. This way she can't bother us."
"It's not worth it if everything else is bothering you."
"Nothing's bothering me."
She sounded a little defensive. "Yeah?" I asked meanly. "Because you're so in love with Aaron? Because you can't wait to have sex with him again?" She glared at me.
"Have I mentioned you can be a huge bitch sometimes?"
I ignored that. "I'm just saying you've got enough shit to worry about without all this. You're burning yourself out with all the compulsion you're using."
"Rose!"
She glanced anxiously around.
"Be quiet."
"But it's true. Using it all the time is going to screw with your head, for real."
"Don't you think you're getting carried away?"
"What about Ms. Karp?" Lissa's expression went very still.
"What about her?"
"You. You're just like her."
"No, I'm not."
Outrage flashed in those green eyes. She healed, too. Hearing me talk about this shocked her. This topic had weighed us down for so long, but we'd almost never spoken about it.
"That doesn't mean anything."
"You don't think it does? Do you know anyone else who can do that? Or can use compulsion on Dampires and Moroi?"
"She never used compulsion like that," she argued.
"She did. She tried to use it on me the night she left. It started to work, but then they took her away before she finished." Or had they? After all, it was only a month later that Lissa and I had run away from the academy. I'd always thought that was my own idea, but maybe Miss Karp's suggestion had been the true force behind it. Lissa crossed her arms. Her face looked defiant, but her emotions felt uneasy.
"Fine.
So what?
So she's a freak like me. That doesn't mean anything. She went crazy because, well, that was just the way she was. That's got nothing to do with anything else."
"But it's not just her," I said slowly. "There's someone else like you guys, too. Someone I found." I hesitated. "You know, Saint Vladimir?" And that's when I finally let it all out. I told her everything. I told her about how she, Ms. Karp, and Saint Vladimir could all heal and use super compulsion. Although it made her squirm, I told her how they too grew easily upset and had tried to hurt themselves. "He tried to kill himself," I said, not meeting her eyes. "And I used to notice marks on Ms. Karp's skin, like she'd claw at her own face. She tried to hide it with her hair, but I could see the old scratches and tell when she made new ones."
"It doesn't mean anything," insisted Lissa. It's all a coincidence."
She sounded like she wanted to believe that, and inside, some part of her really did. But there was another part of her, a desperate part of her, that had wanted for so long to know that she wasn't a freak, that she wasn't alone.
Even if the news was bad, at least now she knew there were others like her. Is it a coincidence that neither of them seems to have specialized? I recounted my conversation with Miss Carmack and explained my theory about specializing in all four elements. I also repeated Miss Carmack's comment about how that would burn someone out. Lissa rubbed her eyes when I finished, smudging a little of her makeup. She gave me a weak smile.
I don't know what's crazier, what you're actually telling me, or the fact that you actually read something to find all this out.
I grinned, relieved that she'd actually mustered a joke. Hey, I know how to read, too.
I know you do. I also know it took you a year to read the Da Vinci Code, she laughed.
That wasn't my fault, and don't try to change the subject.
I'm not.
She smiled, then sighed.
I just don't know what to think about all this.
There's nothing to think about. Just don't do stuff that'll upset you. Remember coasting through the middle? Go back to that. It's a lot easier on you. She shook her head.
I can't do that. Not yet.
Why not? I already told you. I stopped, wondering why I hadn't caught on before. It's not just Mia. You're doing all this because you feel like you're supposed to. You're still trying to be Andre.
My parents would have wanted me to...
Your parents would have wanted you to be happy.
It's not that easy, Rose. I can't ignore these people forever. I'm royal, too.
Most of them suck.
And a lot of them are going to help rule the Moroi. Andre knew that. He wasn't like the others, but he did what he had to do because he knew how important they were.
I leaned back against the bench. Well, maybe that's the problem. We're deciding who's important based on family alone, so we end up with these screwed-up people making decisions. That's why Moroi numbers are dropping and bitches like Tatiana are queen. Maybe there needs to be a new royal system.
Come on, Rose. This is the way it is. That's the way it's been for centuries. We have to live with that.
I glared.
Okay, how about this? She continued. You're worried about me becoming like them, like Miss Carp and St. Vladimir, right? Well, she said I shouldn't use the powers, that it would make things get worse if I did. What if I just stop? Compulsion, healing everything.
I narrowed my eyes. You could do that? The convenient compulsion aside, that was what I'd wanted her to do the whole time. Her depression had started at the same time the powers emerged, just after the accident. I had to believe they were connected, particularly in light of the evidence and Ms. Karp's warnings.
Yes.
Her face was perfectly composed, her expression serious and steady. With her pale hair woven into a neat French braid and a suede blazer over her dress, she looked like she could have taken her family's place on the council right now. You'd have to give up everything, I warned. No healing, no matter how cute and cuddly the animal, and no more compulsion to dazzle the royals. She nodded seriously.
I can do it. Will that make you feel better?
Yeah, but I'd feel even better if you'd stop magic and went back to hanging out with Natalie.
I know. But I can't stop, not now at least.
I couldn't get her to budge on that, yet, but knowing that she would avoid using her powers relieved me. All right, I said, picking up my backpack. I was late for practice, again. You can keep playing with the Brat Pack, so long as you keep the other stuff in check. I hesitated. And you know, you really have made your point with Aaron and Mia. You don't have to keep him around to keep hanging out with the royals.
Why do I keep getting the feeling you don't like him anymore?
I like him okay, which is about as much as you like him. And I don't think you should get hot and sweaty with people you only like okay. Lissa widened her eyes in pretend astonishment.
Is this Rose Hathaway talking?
Have you reformed?
Or do you have someone you like more than okay?
Hey, I said uncomfortably. I'm just looking out for you. That, and I've never noticed how boring Aaron is before. She scoffed.
You think everyone's boring.
Christian isn't. It slipped out before I could stop it. She quit smiling.
He's a jerk. He just stopped talking to me for no reason one day.
She crossed her arms.
And don't you hate him anyway?
I can still hate him and think he's interesting. But I was also starting to think that I might have made a big mistake about Christian. He was creepy and dark and liked to set people on fire, true. On the other hand, he was smart and funny in a twisted way, and somehow had a calming effect on Lissa. But I'd messed it all up. I'd let my anger and jealousy get the best of me and ended up separating them. If I'd let him go to her in the garden that night, maybe she wouldn't have gotten upset and cut herself. Maybe they'd be together now, away from all the school politics. Fate must have been thinking the same thing, because 5 minutes after I left Lissa, I passed Christian walking across the quad. Our eyes locked for a moment before we passed each other. I nearly kept walking. Nearly. Taking a deep breath, I came to a stop. "Wait, Christian," I called out to him. Damn, I was so late for training. Dimitri was going to kill me. Christian spun around to face me, hands stuffed in the pockets of his long black coat, his posture slumped and uncaring.
"Yeah?"
"Thanks for the books." He didn't say anything. "The ones you gave to Mason?"
"Oh, I thought you meant the other books."
"Smartass. Aren't you going to ask what they were for?"
"Your business. Just figured you were bored being suspended."
"I'd have to be pretty bored for that." He didn't laugh at my joke.
"What do you want, Rose? I've got places to be."
I knew he was lying, but my sarcasm no longer seemed as funny as usual. "I want you to, hang out with Lissa again."
"Are you serious?"
He studied me closely, suspicion all over him.
"After what you said to me?"
"Yeah, well, didn't Mason tell you?" Christian's lips turned up into a sneer.
"He told me something."
"And?"
"And I don't want to hear it from Mason."
His sneer cranked up when I glared.
"You sent him to apologize for you. Step up and do it yourself."
"You're a jerk," I informed him.
"Yeah, and you're a liar. I want to see you eat your pride."
"I've been eating my pride for 2 weeks," I growled. Shrugging, he turned around and started to walk away. "Wait," I called, putting my hand on his shoulder. He stopped and looked back at me. "All right, all right. I lied about how she felt. She never said any of that stuff about you, okay? She likes you. I made it up because I don't like you."
"And yet you want me to talk to her?"
When the next words left my lips, I could barely believe it. "I think you might be good for her." We stared at each other for several heavy moments. His smirk dried up a little. Not much surprised him. This did.
"I'm sorry. I didn't hear you. Can you repeat that?" he finally asked.
I almost punched him in the face. "Will you stop it already? I want you to hang out with her again."
"No."
"Look, I told you, I lied."
"It's not that. It's her. You think I can talk to her now? She's Princess Lissa again."
Venom dripped off his words.
"I can't go near her, not when she's surrounded by all those royals."
"You're royal too," I said, more to myself than him. I kept forgetting the Ozeras were one of the 12 families.
"Doesn't mean much in a family full of Strigoi, huh?"
"But you're not... Wait. That's why she connects to you," I realized with a start.
"Because I'm going to become a Strigoi?" he asked snidely.
"No. Because you lost your parents, too. Both of you saw them die."
"She saw hers die. I saw mine murdered."
I flinched. "I know. I'm sorry. It must have been... Well... I don't have any idea what it was like." Those crystal blue eyes went unfocused.
"It was like seeing an army of death invade my house."
"You mean your parents?"
He shook his head. The guardians who came to kill them. I mean, my parents were scary, yeah, but they still looked like my parents. A little paler, I guess. Some red in their eyes. But they walked and talked the same way. I didn't know anything was wrong with them, but my aunt did. She was watching me when they came for me.
Were they going to convert you? I'd forgotten my original mission here, too caught up in the story. You were really little.
I think they were going to keep me until I was older, then turn me. Aunt Tasha wouldn't let them take me. They tried to reason with her, convert her too, but when she wouldn't listen, they tried to take her by force. She fought them, got really messed up, and then the guardian showed up.
His eyes drifted back to me. He smiled, but there was no happiness in it.
Like I said, an army of death. I think you're crazy, Rose, but if you turn out like the rest of them, you're going to be able to do some serious damage one day. Even I won't mess with you.
I felt horrible. He'd had a miserable life, and I'd taken away one of the few good things in it. Christian, I'm sorry for screwing things up between you and Lyssa. It was stupid. She wanted to be with you. I think she still does now. If you could just...
I told you, I can't.
I'm worried about her. She's into all this royal stuff because she thinks it's going to get back at Mia. She's doing it for me.
And you aren't grateful?
The sarcasm returned. I'm worried. She can't handle playing all these catty political games. It isn't good for her. But she won't listen to me. I could use some help.
She could use some help. Hey, don't look so surprised. I know there's something funny going on with her, and I'm not even talking about the wrist thing.
I jumped. Did she tell you? Why not? She told him everything else.
She didn't need to, he said. I've got eyes.
I must have looked pathetic, because he sighed and ran a hand through his hair.
Look, if I catch Lyssa alone, I'll try to talk to her, but honestly, if you really want to help her, well, I know I'm supposed to be all anti-establishment, but you might get the best help talking to somebody else. Karova. Your guardian guy, I don't know. Someone who knows something. Someone you trust.
Lyssa wouldn't like that, I considered. Neither would I.
Yeah, well, we all have to do things we don't like. That's life.
My snarky switch flipped on. What are you, an after-school special? A ghostly smile flickered across his face.
If you weren't so psychotic, you'd be fun to hang around.
Funny, I feel that way about you, too. He didn't say anything else, but the smile grew, and he walked away. Chapter 17. A few days later, Lyssa found me outside the commons and delivered the most astonishing news.
Uncle Victor's getting Natalie off campus this weekend to go shopping in Missoula for the dance. They said I could come along.
I didn't say anything. She looked surprised at my silence.
Isn't that cool?
For you, I guess. No malls or dances in my future. She smiled excitedly.
He told Natalie she could bring two other people besides me. I convinced her to bring you and Camille.
I threw up my hands. Well, thanks, but I'm not even supposed to go to the library after school. No one's going to let me go to Missoula.
Uncle Victor thinks he can get Headmistress Kirova to let you go. Dimitri's trying, too.
Dimitri?
Yeah. He has to go with me if I leave campus.
She grinned, taking my interest in Dimitri as interest in the mall.
They figured out my account, finally. I got my allowance back. So we can buy other stuff along with dresses. And you know if they let you go to the mall, they have to let you go to the dance.
Do we go to dances now? I said. We never had before. School-sponsored social events? No way.
Of course not. But you know there'll be all kinds of secret parties. We'll start at the dance and sneak off.
She sighed happily.
Mia's so jealous she can barely stand it.
She went on and on about the stores we'd go to, all the things we'd buy. I admit, I was kind of excited at the thought of getting some new clothes, but I doubted I'd actually get this mythical release.
"Oh, hey," she said excitedly. "You should see these shoes Camille let me borrow. I never knew we wore the same size. Hang on."
She opened her backpack and began riffling through it. Suddenly, she screamed and threw it down. Books and shoes spilled out. So did a dead dove. It was one of the pale brown mourning doves that sat on wires along the freeway and under trees on campus. It had so much blood on it that I couldn't figure out where the wound was. Who knew something so small even had that much blood? Regardless, the bird was definitely dead. Covering her mouth, Lissa stared wordlessly, eyes wide. "Son of a bitch," I swore. Without hesitating, I grabbed a stick and pushed the little feathered body aside. When it was out of the way, I started shoving her stuff back into the backpack, trying not to think about dead bird germs. "Why the hell does this keep... Liss!" I leapt over and grabbed her, pulling her away. She had been kneeling on the ground, with her hand outstretched to the dove. I don't think she even realized what she was about to do. The instinct in her was so strong, it acted on its own. "Lissa," I said, tightening my hand around hers. She was still leaning toward the bird. "Don't. Don't do it."
"I can save it."
"No, you can't. You promised, remember? Some things have to stay dead. Let this one go." Still feeling her tension, I pleaded.
"Please, Liss. You promised. No more healings. You said you wouldn't. You promised me."
After a few more moments, I felt her hand relax and her body slump against mine.
"I hate this, Rose. I hate all of this."
Natalie walked outside then, oblivious to the gruesome sight awaiting her.
"Hey, do you guys... Oh, my God!"
She squealed, seeing the dove.
"What is that?"
I helped Lissa as we rose to our feet. "Another, prank."
"Is it dead?"
She scrunched up her face in disgust. "Yes," I said firmly. Natalie, picking up on our tension, looked between the two of us.
"What else is wrong?"
"Nothing." I handed Lissa her backpack. "This is just someone's stupid, sick joke, and I'm going to tell Kirova so they can clean this up." Natalie turned away, looking a little green.
"Why do people keep doing this to you? It's horrible."
Lissa and I exchanged looks. "I have no idea," I said. Yet as I walked to Kirova's office, I started to wonder. When we'd found the fox, Lissa had hinted that someone must know about the raven. I hadn't believed that. We'd been alone in the woods that night, and Ms. Karp wouldn't have told anyone. But what if someone actually had seen? What if someone kept doing this not to scare her, but to see if she'd heal again? What had that rabbit note said? "I know what you are." I didn't mention any of this to Lissa. I figured there were only so many of my conspiracy theories she could handle. Besides, when I saw her the next day, she'd practically forgotten the dove in light of other news. Kirova had given me permission to go on the trip that weekend. The prospect of shopping can brighten a lot of dark situations, even animal murder, and I put my own worries on hold. Only when the time came, I discovered my release came with strings attached.
"Headmistress Kirova thinks you've done well since coming back,"
Dmitri told me. "Aside from starting a fight in Mr. Nagy's class?"
"She doesn't blame you for that. Not entirely. I convinced her you needed a break, and that you could use this as a training exercise."
"Training exercise?" He gave me a brief explanation as we walked out to meet the others going with us. Victor Dashkov, as sickly as ever, was there with his guardians, and Natalie practically barreled into him. He smiled and gave her a careful hug, one that ended when a coughing fit took over. Natalie's eyes went wide with concern as she waited for it to pass. He claimed he was fine to accompany us, and while I admired his resolve, I thought he'd been putting himself through a lot just to shop with a bunch of teenage girls. We rode out the 2-hour trip to Missoula in a large school van, leaving just after sunrise. Many Moroi lived separately from humans, but many also lived among them, and when shopping at their malls, you had to go during their hours. The back windows of the van had tinted glass to filter the light and keep the worst of it away from the vampires. We had 9 people in our group: Lissa, Victor, Natalie, Camille, Dimitri, me, and 3 other guardians. 2 of the guardians, Ben and Spiridon, always traveled with Victor. The 3rd was one of the school's guardians, Stan, the jerk who'd humiliated me on my first day back.
"Camille and Natalie don't have personal guardians yet," Dimitri explained to me. "They're both under the protection of their family's guardians. Since they are academy students leaving campus, a school guardian accompanies them, Sten. I go because I'm Lisa's assigned guardian. Most girls her age wouldn't have a personal guardian yet, but circumstances make her unusual."
I sat in the back of the van with him and Spiridon so they could dispense guardian wisdom to me as part of the training exercise. Ben and Stan sat up front, while the others sat in the middle. Lissa and Victor talked to each other a lot, catching up on news. Camille raised to be polite among older royals, smiled and nodded along. Natalie, on the other hand, looked left out and kept trying to shift her father's attention from Lissa. It didn't work. He'd apparently learned to tune out her chatter. I turned back to Dimitri. She's supposed to have 2 guardians. Princes and princesses always do. Spiridon was Dimitri's age, with spiky blonde hair and a more casual attitude. Despite his Greek name, he had a southern drawl.
"Don't worry, she'll have plenty when the time comes. Dimitri's already one of them. Odds are you'll be one too. And that's why you're here today."
"The training part," I guessed.
"Yup. You're gonna be Dimitri's partner."
A moment of funny silence fell, probably not noticeable to anyone except Dimitri and me. Our eyes met.
"Guarding partner," Dimitri clarified unnecessarily, like maybe he too had been thinking of other kinds of partners.
"Yup," agreed Spiridon. Oblivious to the tension around him, he went on to explain how guardian pairs worked. It was standard stuff, straight from my textbooks, but it meant more now that I'd be doing it in the real world. Guardians were assigned to Moroi based on importance. 2 was a common grouping, one I'd probably work in a lot with Lissa. 1 guardian stayed close to the target. The other stood back and kept an eye on the surroundings. Boringly, those holding these positions were called near and far guards.
"You'll probably always be near guard," Dimitri told me. "You're female and the same age as the princess. You can stay close to her without attracting any attention."
"And I can't ever take my eyes off her," I noted, "or you." Spiridon laughed again and elbowed Dimitri.
"You've got a star student there. Did you give her a steak?" "No, she's not ready."
"I would be if someone would show me how to use one," I argued. I knew every guardian in the van had a stake and a gun concealed on him.
"More to it than just using the stake," said Dimitri in his old and wise way. "You've still got to subdue them, and you've got to bring yourself to kill them."
"Why wouldn't I kill them?"
"Most Rigoi used to be Moroi who purposely turned. Sometimes they're Moroi or vampires turned by force. It doesn't matter. There's a strong chance you might know one of them. Could you kill someone you used to know?"
This trip was getting less fun by the minute. I guess so. I'd have to, right? If it's them or Lissa.
"You might still hesitate," said Dimitri. "And that hesitation could kill you. And her."
"Then how do you make sure you don't hesitate?"
"You have to keep telling yourself that they aren't the same people you knew. They've become something dark, and twisted. Something unnatural. You have to let go of attachments and do what's right. If they have any grain of their former selves left, they'll probably be grateful.
Grateful for me killing them?
If someone turned you into a Strigoi, what would you want? He asked.
I didn't know how to answer that, so I said nothing. Never taking his eyes off me, he kept pushing.
What would you want if you knew you were going to be converted into a Strigoi against your will? If you knew, you would lose all sense of your old morals and understanding of what's right and wrong. If you knew, you'd live the rest of your life, your immortal life, killing innocent people. What would you want?
The van had grown uncomfortably silent. Staring at Dimitri, burdened by all those questions, I suddenly understood why he and I had this weird attraction, good looks aside. I'd never met anyone else who took being a guardian so seriously, who understand all the life and death consequences. Certainly no one my age did yet. Mason hadn't been able to understand why I couldn't relax and drink at the party. Dimitri said I grasped my duty better than many older guardians, and I didn't get why, especially when they would have seen so much more death and danger. But I knew in that moment that he was right, that I had some weird sense of how life and death and good and evil worked with each other. So did he. We might get lonely sometimes. We might have to put our fun on hold. We might not be able to live the lives we wanted for ourselves. But that was the way it had to be. We understood each other, understood that we had others to protect. Our lives would never be easy. And making decisions like this one was part of that. If I became Strigoi, I'd want someone to kill me.
So would I,
he said quietly. I could tell he'd had the same flash of realization I'd just had, that same sense of connection between us.
It reminds me of Mikhail hunting Sonya,
murmured Victor thoughtfully.
Who are Mikhail and Sonya? Asked Lyssa.
Victor looked surprised.
Why, I thought you knew. Sonya Karp?
Sonya You mean Miss Karp? What about her?
She looked back and forth between me and her uncle. She became Strigoi, I said, not meeting Lyssa's eyes. By choice. I'd known Lyssa would find out someday. It was the final piece of Ms. Karp's saga, a secret I'd kept to myself. A secret that worried me constantly. Lyssa's face and bond registered complete and utter shock, growing in intensity when she realized I'd known and never told. But I don't know who Mikhail is, I added.
Mikhail Tanner, said Spiridon.
Oh, Guardian Tanner. He was here before we left. I frowned. Why is he chasing Ms. Karp?
To kill her, said Dimitri flatly. They were lovers.
The entire Strigoi thing shifted into new focus for me. Running into a Strigoi I knew during the heat of battle was one thing. Purposely hunting down someone I'd loved. Well, I didn't know if I could do that, even if it was technically the right thing.
Perhaps it is time to talk about something else,
said Victor gently.
Today isn't a day to dwell on depressing topics.
I think all of us felt relieved to get to the mall. Shifting into my bodyguard role, I stuck by Lyssa's side as we wandered from store to store, looking at all the new styles that were out there. It was nice to be in public again, and to do something with her that was just fun and didn't involve any of the dark, twisted politics of the academy. It was almost like old times. I'd missed just hanging out. I'd missed my best friend. Although it was only just past mid-November, the mall already had glittering holiday decorations up. I decided I had the best job ever. Admittedly, I did feel a little put out when I realized the older guardians got to stay in contact through cool little communication devices. When I protested my lack of one, Dimitri told me I'd learn better without one. If I could handle protecting Lyssa the old-fashioned way, I could handle anything. Victor and Spiridon stayed with us while Dimitri and Ben fanned out.